So I've got something exciting to share. My book, What Are You Thirsty For? Rethinking Alcohol and the Life You Want, is now available for pre-order. It's about rethinking your drinking, not because you necessarily have to, but because deep down you know there's more waiting on the other side. It's about creating space for clarity, for calm, and the version of you that doesn't need alcohol to cope. So if you're looking for a refreshing take on alcohol identity and desire, just tap the link in the show notes and pre-order. Right, let's get on with the episode. Welcome to the Big Drink Rethink podcast with me, your host, Anna Donaghy. You're tuning into a Q&A episode where I answer the questions asked by podcast listeners or my coaching clients. We're going to be covering a wide range of topics relevant to you if you're rethinking and reshaping your relationship with alcohol. Everything from how to face common challenges, how to overcome personal doubts, how to manage the inevitable emotions, and so much more. Thank you for engaging and asking these questions, and for showing up to hear my thoughts and perspectives. Well, hello, and welcome back to the Big Drink Rethink and this Q&A episode where I'm answering one of these kind of tender but really important questions inspired by a listener who sent me an email and said, how do I rebuild trust in myself? It's a fundamental question. And to be honest, digging into the background here, looking at the rest of the email, it's evident that this lady has been drinking for a very long time and has gone through many cycles of what she would call failed moderation, promises or commitments that she's made to herself and subsequently broken. So well and truly stuck in this sort of cycle of rinse and repeat, which has had this gnawing effect on her trust levels of herself, as they do. And anyone who has been in that situation knows very, very well what we're talking about here. Now, that question might sound very simple on the surface, but it holds so much weight. Because if you've ever made a promise to yourself about drinking, about stopping, about the never again, and then not kept it, you'll know how painful that breach of trust can feel. And also if you've broken promises to others too. You know, maybe other people are telling you to stop drinking, asking you to stop drinking, begging you to stop drinking, partners, friends, family. And they, you know, you're sort of carrying the weight of the extra weight of external trust as well. And those broken promises can bring around a breach of trust as far as those people are concerned. So today we're going to talk about how to rebuild it, not just with others, but actually most fundamentally with yourself, because this has got to come first. And that is in fact the foundation that everything else rests on. It's the piece that's most important to talk about. It's hard to explain to someone who's never been caught in the loop, but the erosion of trust, and you'll know this if you have been caught in the loop, the erosion of trust isn't just hideous, which it is, because it eats away at your confidence and your self-efficacy, but it's really bloody disorientating too. It messes with your internal compass, because most of us go through life needing to believe, I know who I am. I know what I can and will do in any given situation. I can count on me. And when alcohol starts to chip away at that moment by moment and promise by promise, you don't just feel like you're making a bad choice. You kind of feel like you've lost your own coordinates. Okay, you say something like, I'll only have one tonight, and you mean it. And you say, you know, this time is going to be different, and you mean it. And maybe it feels different, and you feel steady and a bit more motivated and determined. And then it just happens again. And that sinking feeling kicks in, and the one that says, well, you know, what just happened? Why did I do that again? And honestly, it's terrifying, because you start to ask yourself, can I actually trust myself at all? Not even just with regards to drink, but can I actually trust myself at all? And when you can't, where do you go? it just kind of rocks your complete foundation. It rocks you to the core. It feels like the ground beneath you is no longer stable, and it can actually have you stopping making plans, stopping setting goals. You don't believe your own narratives, and it starts to really sort of shrink your ambition. And as I say, you know, your goals, where you think you can go and what you think you're capable of. And instead of feeling like someone who's just had a setback, you begin to feel like someone who isn't capable. All right. And that is an awful place to reach, because shame creeps in. When you think you aren't capable, shame creeps in with that sort of whisper of, you always do this. You know, you're weak. You're not who you say you are. You can't be who you want to be. And when you feel that, when we feel we're too far gone, when we feel too fragile, too flawed, we drink. And, you know, clearly not to celebrate or connect, but to escape that feeling of having failed. So it's a cruel and quiet loop, and one that doesn't necessarily look terribly dramatic from the outside, but on the inside, it's brutal. You're stuck between wanting better and not trusting yourself to follow through. And all the time, other people are thinking you're just making a choice. But you've lost that all-important trust in yourself. And that's why rebuilding trust isn't a fluffy sort of motivational idea. It's absolutely bloody essential. And that's why this is such a good question. Yeah, I mean, it's essential. I'd go as far as to say it's the very foundation of any rethink, really, because if you can learn to rebuild your inner steadiness, even gently, very slowly, you can start to believe in yourself again. And without that self-belief, nothing is possible. With that self-belief, everything is possible. At our very heart, we want to be someone we can count on. That's it. That's the quiet, aching need. Not to be perfect, not to be superhuman, just someone we can trust to mean what they say, to do what they say they're going to do, to follow through, and basically to have our own backs when things get hard. Because when you can count on yourself, there's a kind of calm that settles in. You can sort of walk a little taller, you can speak a little clearer, you can sleep better, not because everything's fixed, but because there's no internal argument going on all night long. But when that self-trust gets eroded by broken promises or ignored boundaries and sneaky little, you know, just one more moments, it's like you're living with a version of yourself that you simply can't rely on. And that's a terribly hard place to live, because everything feels uncertain. You know, not least, as I've just said, you know, can I make plans and you know, trust myself to stick to them? But, you know, can I even go to that party and feel proud of how I'm going to show up? Can I go to that party trusting that I'm not going to make a dick of myself and regret it all tomorrow? You know, can I wake up tomorrow and feel good about how I handled today? I doubt it, because I don't trust myself to do the stuff to bring that feeling about. So when the answer to those questions starts becoming, I don't know, then clearly a wobble is going to set in. And here's the tough bit. No one can give you self-trust. There's a clue in the words there. Self-trust. They can believe in you, sure. They can cheer you on, yes. But that quiet knowing, the self part of self-trust, that quiet knowing that, you know, I've got this, that has to come from you. You know, when we talk about being able to count on ourselves, we're also talking about something that psychologists call self-efficacy. It's a bit of a clunky phrase, but the meaning's really, really powerful. self-efficacy is just your belief in your ability to do what you set out to do, to take action, meet a challenge, and influence what happens next. It's not about having all the answers. It's not about being fearless or perfect or, like, you know, always on it. It's just about believing that I can handle this. I can make choices that move me forward. I can do hard things. And I don't need alcohol to carry me through. And in a way, our lack of self-trust can have us reaching for alcohol. You know, it's kind of, you know, I need to relax, but I don't trust myself to be able to do it without alcohol. Or I need to calm down, but I don't trust myself to be able to do it without alcohol. I want to go to this party, but I don't trust myself to feel confident with alcohol. So this lack of self-trust is fundamental in terms of our beliefs and our self-efficacy. But it is clearly going to be fundamental when it comes to kicking alcohol out of touch. Okay, so it's this fundamental belief that I can do hard things. I can. Now, the thing is, self-efficacy isn't something that you're born with. You know, it's not the preserve of the naturally confident or people who seem to never mess up. It's not. It's built through experience, through small moments where you choose to stay, where you choose to follow through, and where you choose to feel the wobble, and you choose not to abandon yourself. That is how we start to trust ourselves again. And that's how we start to remember, oh yeah, 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 okay, yeah, yeah, I can count on me. But when alcohol has been your coping mechanism, you know, your go-to tool for numbing and escaping or smoothing out the edges, as I say, that's where it starts to erode your self-belief. Because over time, every time you're just going to have one, every time you say never again and it doesn't quite hold, it chips away at your sense of personal power. Not just your willpower, but this fundamental self-belief. You stop expecting yourself to be able to follow through. And worse, actually, this is the real bugger. you stop trusting yourself that you even can and that you ever will be able to, which is a horribly, horribly sort of hopeless and helpless, uncomfortable place to live. It's destabilizing, as I said, it's disorientating, and not just emotionally, but practically as well, because you start second guessing everything. You don't, as I say, you don't set goals because you think you're going to quit. You don't take new things on because you fear you're going to fail. That's a big one, right? That is a really big one. You don't set goals because you assume that you're going to quit. You don't try new things because you assume and fear that you're going to fail. You've lost faith in your own promises, and then that narrative, that all-important narrative that we've talked about on this podcast before, the language we use, oh, I'm just someone who never follows through, you know, it becomes so insidious and so baked into your mind. That's not laziness, by the way. It's just a nervous system that's been burned one too many times, and narratives that have begun to really embed themselves in our sense of self. Bloody hell, sometimes when I do these podcasts, it's like a trip down a very uncomfortable memory lane for me. I remember this feeling, you know, those feelings of self-distrust so vividly. But it's, you know, it is entirely possible. It is entirely possible to rebuild self-trust and self-belief. And you know, here's what I want you to know. Self-trust is rebuilt the same way that we lost it, which is repeatedly, okay? We lost trust in ourselves because we repeatedly said we were going to do things and then we didn't. And little by little, We chipped away at our self-trust. We can rebuild it in the same way, repeatedly and little by little. And here's what I really want you to know. You didn't lose trust in yourself overnight, so you're not going to rebuild it overnight either. But a little bit like a muscle, it will grow through that repetition. Not the big declarations, but the little ones. And they can sound as simple as this, okay? I'm going to have a glass of water each evening before I pour a drink. I'm going to pause and breathe before I react. Every time you do that thing you said you were going to do, you kind of lay a brick, a new firm piece of foundation, okay? But importantly, what you're really doing as well is something absolutely fundamental, which is habit change. In fact, rebuilding trust and building a sustainable new habit are kind of one and the same. It's what BJ Fogg talks about in his book, you know, Tiny Habits, and why those small changes stick. Small strategic changes that can start to shift a pattern. So instead of automatically reaching for alcohol, you can introduce those new responses that meet the same needs, but without the same downsides. So he says in his book, BJ Fogg says in his book, you know, most people fail at habit change because they try and go big overnight. They set rules like I won't drink this week, or I'll quit alcohol forever. And then, you know, understandably, if they struggle to even put a night in without alcohol, it feels totally overwhelming. They slip up, they give up entirely, they lose their trust, this sense of self-efficacy. Because, you know, these big sudden changes, they trigger resistance, whereas tiny, tiny little changes, like I'm just going to have a glass of water before I have a drink, you know, they build momentum. So yeah, I'll drink a non-alcoholic drink before my usual drink. I'll wait 10 minutes from when I first want to drink to when I'm going to pour it. Or I'm going to have a glass of water. Now, these small shifts don't seem much, but they chip away at an old habit loop. So they're breaking down an old habit loop. And at the same time, they are laying those little steps towards building your self-trust. But really think about what I've just said, right? Perhaps in the first week, when you're trying to build your trust and set commitments, the things that you're committing to aren't actually around not drinking. If you're saying I could, you know, just wait 10 minutes until I have a drink, or I'm going to have an alcoholic drink, but after I've had an alcohol-free drink, I'm going to have an alcohol-free drink first. My favorite, and one that I use, is I'm going to wait 10 minutes, but in that 10 minutes, I am going to do a bit of journaling, and then I'm going to decide. The metric isn't therefore even whether you went on and had a drink. That's not what you're committing to. The metric is whether you did the things you said you'd do first. Whether you follow Fogg's thoughts of making those commitments really small and simple and almost too easy to fail. Or James Clear, who's also written about this, you know, he talks about them as atomic little habits that all add up. I call them micro commitments, you know. The point is, it's not about the size of the action, it's about the consistency. And it's not even necessarily about not drinking. It's about the things you're going to do first. And that tiny little change done every day beats or trumps a massive change that you can't stick to. And over time, not only do these little shifts start to retrain your brain in the form and the direction of a new habit, but they start to make you feel like you can do what you said you were going to do. Go me. I had an alcoholic-free drink before I had a drink last night. Amazing. I told myself I wouldn't, I did. Go me. You know, I played a podcast instead of cooking whilst I was, you know, drinking whilst I was cooking last night. Go me. All right. And it sounds so small, but it's so important. because over time, you're not just proving that you can put these little things into your day and delay drinking, you're proving you can show up and honor yourself. Because every single time you do what you said you were going to do, even if it's tiny, even if no one else sees it, you're saying to yourself, hey, hoo, hello, I'm here, I'm listening, you can count on me now. And that's what changes things, not the big declarations, but the repeated experience of becoming someone you trust again. Let me tell you, for nothing, there is zero more powerful than being able to stand in your own life and say, whatever happens, I've got me. That is self-trust, and it starts with those small, fulfilled promises. So, on a practical level, every morning, try naming one promise, just one, that you're going to keep that day. It could be, I'm going to go for a 10-minute walk after work. It could be that the first time my mind turns to having a drink, I'm going to have that non-alcoholic drink first. It could be I'm going to journal for 5 minutes. It doesn't matter what it is. What matters is that it's doable. And I do suggest you actually start ridiculously small. Okay. The next thing you do is you track it, not to measure perfection, but to witness consistency. Okay. To witness achievement and consistency. You're retraining your brain to believe your own voice again. So your brain's quite simple in many ways, and it really, really helps if you can see the proof. So track it. And the most important thing is you replace any sense of self-shaming with self-curiosity. So things don't always go to plan. And when you slip, or you pour the drink you swore you wouldn't, or maybe you just find yourself back in a pattern you thought you'd outgrown, your brain is going to default to, what the hell is wrong with me? Why do I always do this? I have no willpower. I'm useless. It's brutal, your brain. But here's what that inner shaming actually does. It stops the learning. It shuts down any reflection. And it pulls you into a spiral, a downward spiral, and you miss the information that could help you move forwards and upwards. So what if, just for a moment, instead of shaming yourself, you got curious? Not in some kind of fluffy kind of way, but in a really grounded, okay, let me actually understand what happened here kind of way. And you kind of think to yourself, what was I feeling in that moment? What did I need that I didn't get? Was I lonely? Was I tired? Was I overstimulated? Was I under-supported? Was I trying to reward myself? Was I trying to escape something? You know, these questions are invitations. You know, they're saying, look, I'm willing to look at this. I'm not going to punish myself over this. I just want to understand. And that is not just about, I suppose, internal self-trust. That's how you start to rebuild your internal integrity as well. Because every single time you respond to a slip up or a wobble with honest curiosity instead of shame, you're also kind of proving to yourself that I can be trusted even when I'm struggling. I don't need to hide from my own behavior. I can sit here with it. I can learn from it, and I can try something new. I'm someone who stays. I'm not someone who abandons myself when things get hard. That is the root of self-trust. Not perfection, not streaks, not white-knuckling your way through. It's your willingness to stay in a relationship with yourself, even when it's messy. And when you make that shift from what's wrong with me to what was happening for me, everything softens. You create space to learn. You show yourself compassion without letting yourself off the hook. And you become someone you can rely on, not because you never slip, but because you stop disappearing when you do. These little shifts rebuild your internal integrity and that sense of I'm someone I can rely on. So that part's key, okay? And you've got to let go of the need to be perfect. Rebuilding trust doesn't mean being perfect from now on in. It means being real. Real with yourself, real with others, real in how you handle the hard days. What people really want, including you, is to feel safe around you. Safe that you'll tell the truth. Safe that you'll do what you say. Safe that you'll stay, even when it's uncomfortable. That doesn't require perfection. It requires presence. And presence is what alcohol stole from you. Now, you can get it back. Let's talk for a moment about the second part of the question, you know, how you rebuild trust with other people. Because I know, you know, especially for those of us who've used alcohols in ways that have caused harm and broken promises or created chaos, this one can really, really, really sting. I won't drink tonight, I promise you. I promise you, husband, partner, wife, whatever. I promise you, my children, my friends, that I won't drink tonight. And then you did. This is the last time, you will say. This is the last time. I promise you. All those interested parties again, all those people vested in your, you know, in your life who you touch and affect and influence, all these people you're saying, you know, this is the last time, I promise you. And it wasn't. I don't have a problem, you say to them, when deep down you know that you do. Okay? If someone you love has been through those cycles with you, they are highly likely, when you think about it, to have stopped believing you. Okay? And that, clearly, devastating. Because now you're trying to change. And just as you're actually changing, and just as you're beginning to show up in a different way, you're doing the work, maybe you're making all the hard choices, it can feel like no one sees it. Like you're finally showing up as the person that you've been trying so hard to be, and they're still looking at you like you're about to mess it all up again. And actually, I've experienced this in many, many ways, not just myself, but in coaching as well. You know, they can still actually be very, very angry. They can be very, very hurt. They can feel very unsafe around you. And that's really so painful. You know, you might be trying very, very hard to prove to them that they can be all of those things around you, safe and trusting and believing, and actually all they want to maybe do is even throw some of the shit at the past, you know, at you, some of the things you've done, constantly reminding you of the person you used to be instead of the person that you're trying to become. And it can hurt. It can really hurt. And it can be very, very frustrating, and it can leave you thinking, what do I have to do? What do I have to do? Don't you see? I'm trying here. Why are you treating me like this? I'm not that old version of myself anymore. What do I have to do to prove that I've changed? There's anger in there, isn't there? There's sadness from our part. We're doing all these things. Most of all, we just want to be believed, to be seen in the now and not remembered for the past. But here's the thing, okay? And it's really hard, but it's so important. You cannot demand trust. You can only demonstrate it. You cannot demand it. You can't even gently ask for it, to be honest. You can only demonstrate it. Even though that feels unfair, even when it hurts, even if you think you might be making way more effort than you've ever done before and that should be seen and celebrated, you don't need to convince anyone with your words. All right? You can't. But you have to let your actions speak quietly and consistently and repeatedly. Because trust isn't something you get back by asking for it. In the same way as you're rebuilding your self-trust brick by brick, the trust that other people give you has got to be built brick by brick. And it's okay if they're cautious. It's natural that they're going to be cautious. It's okay if they're scared to get hopeful again. I can understand that. They may well be trying to protect themselves and the version of you that has hurt them in the past, even if you're not that person anymore. You're not owed automatic belief, but you are worthy of rebuilding, okay, and worthy of being seen again. And you do that by being consistent and being honest and being open. So if you fuck up, own it early. If you're struggling, say so. Even if it's awkward, even if you're scared that they're going to roll their eyes and think, here we go again. Because here's the thing, the version of you that says, I messed up, but I'm trying to do better, that version of you is already someone worth trusting. That's not weakness. That's emotional integrity in my book. And over time, if you keep showing up, even when it feels thankless, trust will return. Again, not just from them, but from yourself as well. And when it does, it's stronger. Okay? It's more real. It's more grounded. Because it's not based on promises. It's based on evidence. And you're the one providing it. So if you're listening and wondering, can I trust myself again? The answer is yes. Yes, you can. But do it slowly, repeatedly, and gently. You do it by showing up when no one's watching, by noticing the quiet victories, by naming what you need and giving yourself a chance to meet it. And if others don't trust you yet, that's okay too. Keep showing them, not to win them back, but to become someone you believe in again. Because that's where it starts. And the more you learn to trust yourself, the less you'll feel the need to escape from yourself. You're not here to prove anything. You're here to become someone you can rely on. Okay? You already are. So thank you, thank you, thank you to the listener who sent in this question. It's so fundamental. I've been doing this podcast for, 15, 16 months now. And I keep going, how the hell have we not covered this yet? So yeah, really, really valuable. Please send me your questions because it means I can create episodes like this, fill in bloody gaps and my sort of, I've got a blind spot. I haven't covered something that should be covered. It means I can do it. It's a really valuable conversation. So thank you to the listener who sent that in. Thank you for listening to the Big Drink Rethink. If this spoke to you, I'd love to hear. Or please share it with someone who needs a reminder that trust can be rebuilt, but it comes from the inside out. I hope you found these perspectives helpful. If you have a question that you'd like me to cover in one of these Q&A episodes, then please email it to coachingquestions@thebigdrinkrethink.com.